So this is side two of our interview. So we were just talking about your passage from London to Canada. Who arranged that passage from...
Canadian government. I had nothing to do with that. You just got a letter that told you the times, the ship, and what more or less you could bring with you. I don't remember what it was. I just remember whatever I had, I packed. I had no wedding gifts. Mum gave me a pair of sheets. No, well, Mum gave me a tablecloth. My mother-in-law bought me sheets. And I think the girls from work had given me odds and bits and pieces. It was nothing that I can... Just nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they gave, my friend gave me a handkerchief. Things like that. No, not like today. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you landed at Pier 21, can you tell me a little bit about that experience, about the landing experience?
Really wasn't any. You docked, and everybody was looking over the sides. And then somehow you went with the movement, and you came down the gangplank, and there was this long table facing the boat with three army people on it. I can't remember. I think it was khaki. And the one in the middle said, "Welcome to Canada. You are now a Canadian citizen." And I remember saying, "Thank you." But it meant nothing. Okay? And then you moved to the left. I don't remember the walk to the train. I don't remember getting on the train. But I do remember sitting down and that the seats, somebody pushed the seat back so you faced each other. And girls moved around and talked, but that was mostly you looked out the window. You know, there was babies, sick babies on there. And there was a porter named Leroy, he was black, and he was making his fortune by charging $5 for a banana. I didn't buy it. You know, but some did. And the food was not good. I remember we went into this boxcar, and there was a seat on each side, like a form bench attached to the sides, and we sat down on that, and we were given sandwiches and stuff. I mean, we weren't hungry, but that's what we were given. It wasn't a sit-down table.
No. I remember reading about some women who, they were so shocked about the food because of living in London and being on such strict rations. Did you find there was a big difference between London, what you were used
on
to,
the boat,
and then...
Yes, on the boat, oh yes, white bread and everything. Marvelous, anything you wanted. On the train, no. Mm. There was no menu. I don't ever remember seeing a menu until they either took the engine or hooked us to something else in Winnipeg. Then we went to the dining car and they had a tablecloth and a menu.
So was this one of your first experiences traveling?
In Canada, oh yeah.
No, but one of your first experiences in your life traveling, had you
anywhere?
Done traveling?
No.
So before you left left Britain, do you remember what you thought Canada would be like? Do you remember any?
I didn't.
You didn't think a lot about what it would be like?
I had no idea of Canada, except the family, his family, his grandfather came on to England, and he told me very honestly of what it was going to be. And I figured he was just pulling my leg.
Because of the, what he told you about Canada?
Yeah, no water. You understand, my dear, there is no water, there is no light, you will be traveling with a horse. And I'm quite honest, and my husband's honest, and all I can remember Art saying to me, "I will work, I will work. I will never let you go without if I can help it." And I believed him, and he never has. So, yeah, but that's, you kind of hear this stuff, but what does it mean?
So I guess you hadn't traveled by horse in London.
Never saw a ruddy horse. How would I travel by one?
Oh, really? So I guess hearing that, did you kind of have a romantic notion of what it would be like?
No. It didn't. It wasn't a romantic era.
Yeah.
It was, everything was down to earth, down to the minute. See, if you've been in survival mode for 5 years, you certainly don't feel romance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You feel kindness and generosity and all that stuff. But as far as things being romantic, that was the movies, but Mrs. Miniver and all that, well, that really wasn't like what it was.
Yeah. So what were your first memories of Canada once?
Getting off the train in Regina, and there was Art grinning from ear to ear in a brown suit with a brown, I suppose he called it a fedora, I called it a trilby, I don't know who's right on that. And all I said was, oh my God, who the hell is that?
Because he looked different?
Well, he's out of uniform.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know him. And I said to him, take your hat off. He'd take it off and put it on. And I didn't know him. I didn't know him.
So how long had it been since you'd last seen him?
About 6-7 months, wasn't it?
So.
Oh, yeah. And I just didn't know him. And it was exhibition time, the exhibition was on, and he took me to the exhibition, and we stayed with some friends of his, the family friends, and they gave us a room, and they menstruated that night. So there was nothing wrong with them, anyway, it didn't bother me. I mean, this man was a total stranger.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And a very loving stranger. And then he took me to some cafe, and one of his army buddies had come back earlier, and it was his cafe, and he saw Art, and it was on the house. Well, everyone was on the house. And I remember going mad at the menu, and I remember nuts. I loved nuts. And I had nuts, and I had butter tarts, and I had butter, lots of butter, lots of food, loved it.
Because you hadn't had that for a long time.
Never knew all that stuff, very rational, you see. And that was, I'd say, the experience of Regina.
Mm.
And then we got on the train, and we're coming home, you see. He said, let's go home. This Art said, it's got hay to cut.
So then you went?
Then we got on the train to Nokomis.
Okay.
I think we stayed 2-3 days in Regina. And then we got on this train, and when I got to Nokomis, the family were there.
And that's where you eventually lived, in Nokomis?
Yes, we still are there.
So could you tell me about your home in Nokomis?
There wasn't one really, dear. We got off the train, and Nell and Bob, Rose was there, and they were the family, and some of the neighbors who were just watching. And they had 2 old trucks, and they threw, I never saw people do things like this. In England, a person picks up a suitcase and puts it into a car. Over in Canada, they pick it up and toss it, right? And I saw my stuff being tossed onto the back of a truck. And there was all this noise about, let's go and hurry up, and revving and noise. And we drove to his aunt's. And his aunt Rose, and she lived 7 miles from town on the Bald Prairie up an Alkali Road. And when we got to her house, she got out of the car, and I think she must have had a sense of humor here, because she said to me, how do you like the house? And I was being very polite. And I said, which one is it? Barns, granaries, pulled down bricks, all of us.
Wow.
And they lived in a shack. And I said, which one is it? And they all thought this was hilariously funny. And Art and I had this, and this little house, by the way, is still a survivor on the neighbor's farm right now. They store stuff in it. It's just a shed, actually. So that was first. And then Art said, I'll take you to our house. Well, then I had dreams of this. My house would be. But it wasn't.
And what was your house like?
You know, the hip roof barns. Well, it's like that. And it had been built in 1916, so here this is 20 years later. It hadn't been lived in for at least 10 years. And it was just unkempt and dirty and cobwebs and Neil Backhouse was there, and there was a garage recorder that was just like a lean-to shack. What do you say? And inside, when I went inside, it was all painted brown. Ceilings, walls, and everything. That was my home.
And you talked. You just mentioned that you didn't get a telephone until
24 years.
24 years later. What about your other, like, electricity and water and that sort of thing?
None. Art. We spent the money on buying a coal and wood range. It was a royal charm. And we, in the living room, we had a Quebec heater, and we shut the upstairs off because it was not insulated. We had a single bed that his aunt donated, and it had a broken end, and if you sat on it too quick, the end came over and hit you, so you got into bed very carefully. And in the winter, this is true, honest to God, it was so cold, we had a buffalo robe on the floor, which his dad gave us for a rug. We put that on the bed. That's how cold it was.
Yeah, because that's in Saskatchewan.
Yeah. And it was something, and the house was totally uninsulated, and the snow actually blew through the walls, and even when my kids were older, you could find snow under the beds. That's how many years it took us to fix.
So was there a point where you might have regretted coming
sure.
to Canada?
I went out one day. Art used to go to his aunt's to get, we had nothing, you see. Now, when he went away, he'd left some cattle, some grain, but I think they used it. And they gave us an old cow, and I think we bought a couple of horses, Dick and Rosie, and whatever else we could afford. Well, what was it, really? And this day, the only way we could have anything, the cow was dry, he'd go over to his aunt's house, but to get a quart of milk, he'd have to milk everything. Then you waited for her to separate it. And she was one of these very women who sterilized every inch of everything with boiling water, so he wouldn't be home sometimes till past dinner time. So I was alone all the time.
But that was quite different than being in London.
God, awful loneliness, you see. And I remember this day walking out the house, and I thought, I'm going to kill myself. And I walked down the road, and there was a bluff on the left and a snowbank. And I sat on top of the snowbank, and I looked at this great big ocean of white. And I thought, all I've got to do is sit here, and I'll die. Then I thought, won't be a person that cares. So I decided nobody would even care. I even thought about my funeral, but nobody would care anyway. So I went home again. I just went back to the house no longer.
And how long had you been in Canada when that occurred?
That first year.
The first winter. So you were probably about 21.
I was 21 in the August. He came in the July, then I turned 21.
Okay.
So it was loneliness.
Loneliness. Yeah, because you lived with your family in London and your brothers.
Yeah.
And this was a different experience.
Absolutely.
And could you describe the community that you lived in, or if there was a community?
There was a community, yeah. The Anglican church ladies gave me a wool blanket and a tea. There was this Charlotte Keeler who had come from Glasgow, another wool bride. And there was another wool bride, but I can't remember who she was. We didn't really know her. And Charlotte and I became friends, of course. And they put on a tea, and the local people gave us a shower. And Art got a job for the Saskatchewan government of grading Highway 15. In those days, he held the maintainer down, the blade, and I drove the tractor. And I went on the tractor the first day I got here. Art showed me how to drive because he got this job. And it needed a driver, and we got $18 for doing well. We had 40 miles. We'd do 10 up, 10 back, 10 up, 10 back. But you do it. It took all day. And you only did it after a rain, because Highway 15 was all dirt, you see. And I drove that tractor till maybe for years when it rained. And that was the income I had, eh? But it wouldn't have amounted to $100 a year, I don't think.
And who taught you how to, like, survive and live in Canada?
I don't know anybody teaching me. I remember his aunt showing me how to cook meat because I didn't know. She taught me how to make meat, cook meat properly. The German ladies, they came and they taught me to make bread. Another German lady came and taught me to crochet. And Charlotte and I, this other war bride, we actually shared our lives for 2 or 3 years. And without her, I couldn't have existed because they were so poor that we moved together. They came to live in our house all winter so that we could share the coal.
And I guess you shared the duties of the
house. Her and I, we were just young kids. And we did the laundry. And she had a baby, a Denise. She was pregnant every year, actually. And she was a great Scot woman, and he was a mean sucker. And I've written about her simply because if anybody taught a man a lesson, she did. You know what I mean? She didn't put up with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put up this stuff, but I never had to. Mm-hmm. But if I had, I would have handled it because she did. She had to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the people, local people, are still friends to this day, or their descendants.
Good. Yeah. So there was.
They were good
of a community.
Good, kind, decent people. Yeah.
And did anyone say anything about you being a foreigner or you being a war bride, or was there any?
No. No, I don't remember. I don't remember getting any sympathy or anyone saying, "Poor you." Nobody said that. A matter of fact, one woman said to me, "Aren't you glad we let you into Canada?" Mm. And I didn't know why I should be glad, but I said, "Oh, yeah."
And what about your husband's family? How were you received by them?
Oh, they treated me as one of the family, but they weren't excessive in giving or loving or anything. You were just there, get on with it. Stoic.
Yeah. So I've read about a few war brides who were very disillusioned by Canada and left after a certain amount of time. Did you know any of these women?
No.
No? And did you ever get that feeling of leaving? Like, you talked about this other feeling of despair.
Oh, no, not once my family came over. They came over in 47, so no, not once they came over. I had roots then.
Okay, they came over in 47.
47.
Okay.
So I had roots then. I had somebody to attach to, yeah.
So that was the first time you saw your family again in 47, and who came over?
My mother and my brother Frank, my brother Al.
And how did they decide to come to Canada?
Because my mother was fretting so badly, losing weight. My brother Frank figured she'd die. He went to see if he could get some transportation over here for her so she could see me and she'd know I was all right, and then she'd be all right. But instead of that, he went to Canada House to find out, looked at the immigration and said that was for me. Came home and he just told the family to immigrate.
So where did they come to? Did they come and live in Saskatchewan as
well? I got my brother a job. I went to Regina, and my brother was a typewriter mechanic for Underwood. So I went to Regina, and there was Underwood there, and a Mr. Kesterton interviewed me, and he promised a job. Now, if you promised a job, you had to, if he failed that job, I had to give consent that I would support the family. If he didn't fit in, or if he got fired, or if he was a liar even, how would we know?
Wow.
So he got that job and he became manager and everything else. Very successful man, but that's how it started.
So I guess after 47, when your family came, you felt a lot more of your community.
Yeah, I was at home. Yeah. I had family. I mean, I could write and didn't visit that much. We didn't have money, you know. Didn't have vehicles. And they didn't have any either.
And we talked about when you were leaving London and this feeling that you were never going to see your family again.
Yeah.
And I guess seeing your family again, that was...
It was... you see, when you're a girl, in that time, you were always... The boys were always of more importance. And so my mother went to live, make house for my brothers. She spent a few months with me until the boys found a place in Regina and got established. Frank got in the typewriters, my youngest brother ended up at Counter Packers. He finally became a bank manager and all the rest, but that was them. And they had to find a place where they could keep them up, support them. And so she stayed with me for about 5 months. And I think for my mother it was hell, because she walked up and down. She never cried. She never said, why did you do this or anything like that. It wasn't that. If only she had the boys to look after. They were her life. And I had made mine with my husband. So she was probably more lonely than I was.
Yeah.
You see? And I think it was only maybe 3 or 4 months before the boys got it. And that, once she got Regina and she got her own kitchen and she's taking care of her sons, everything's all right.
Yeah, and you say that you had 2 sons. Did you feel the same connection with your sons over your daughter?
No, different era. Yeah. Different era altogether. That was the era I was raised in, but certainly didn't raise my kids that way.
Mm. And just speaking about your children, we mentioned that... you had 2 children and then you waited 10 years and then had another child.
My afterthought.
Your afterthought.
I also think he was my blessing, if ever I got one.
Mm.
I love all my children, but this youngest one, he was different. He quite brilliant, and yet people thought he was stupid because he couldn't tie shoelaces, for crying out loud. He hated buttons, so he was always undone buttons. And he could talk about the stars, but he'd walk out of school without his shoes on. And that kind of stuff. And his next move is his doctorate. So, you know, it was just that he was this very precious child. And he was a much loved child,
mm-hmm.
by all the family. And he was such a nice child. He didn't do rotten things. Well, neighbors tell me he did, but I never saw him.
And you had 2 children, actually you had 3 children when you first came to Canada.
No, the first one was born in 1949, I came in 46.
Okay, in 49, and then the next one was in
52, and then 62.
Yeah, so...
Oh, and I lost one in 48.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, you lost one in 48. So. Do you find that there was any connection between you having children and the war? Like, did you want to have children after the war, or did you not want to have children after the war? How did you feel about bringing children into the world after that?
It was never a thing we discussed. I know my husband never wanted children because of poverty, of being unable to, say, supply enough for them. But when we lost that one, it was almost like it was a dreadful experience for him. And then I had Beverly, my daughter, exactly 10 months later. I mean, she was a much needed.
Yeah.
There was a hole there we needed to fill up. And all I know is I've never seen a man so delighted with a child. And even to this day, of the 3 children, he loves them all, but that daughter of his is just. She's beautiful, she's everything.
Yeah.
To him, he just adores her.
That's great. It sounds like you have a really great family.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking, actually, before the tape was on, about you going back to London for the first time.
Yeah, 1966. We'd been to a reunion and looked at all these couples there in Calgary. Art suddenly came in and he said, I'm sending you back. And I remember I said, where do you get the money from? says, I'm going to borrow it. And he went into town and he borrowed the money and I went by ward air. I forget the amount, it wasn't very much in those days, $300 somewhere there. And my daughter by this time was 17 and she would look after my youngest boy, Mark. And he booked the flight by ward air and that was sheer luxury, ward air. And they gave us this marvelous drink and I got drunk on the plane because I don't drink, you see. But every 15 minutes, I think, bought something. And when I got off the plane, all I heard my brother say, well, met me, my brother, on this, oh my God, I think she's drunk. So we went, he took me all over and we visited his house and he took me to see all my aunts and things like that, back to the church. And it was only over there 3 weeks, but I touched the ocean again. That makes sense.
Yeah, so did you feel, when you went back, did you feel like you were going back home? Or did you feel like you were going back home when you went to Saskatchewan?
No, I had my home. What I did was, it was a necessary, I can't think of the right word, to go back and lay to rest ghosts, see? It was needed to close a chapter. And I touched everything, and I smelt everything, and I ate everything. And it filled that hole. You see?
Yeah.
Then when I went back last time, I went back September a year ago. For 2 weeks, I was in a wheelchair. I was waiting to get my hips replaced. When I went back that time, it was enough. I am now happy.
Yeah.
All the bonds have been, all those little slots have been filled. And here, my family now, from there, all the offspring, they want to come over here and immigrate. So we're all joined up again. We're all one again.
Yeah. So when you went back that first time, you mentioned that you're going to visit your family. And did you go see your friends as well?
Yeah. I went to my brother's first. He phoned up my friends. I had a very good friend, Lily. Her and I, well, you have lots of acquaintances, but you only have very few friends, what you call friends. And I would say Lily was my friend. She was a part of me. Yeah. And her and I went all over. We did all the things. We did all the talking. And then I found out that the man she married was a creep. And that was an awakening. And it spoiled the trip. He was a nasty bit of it. And when I went back again in 91, that was the second trip.
Mm-hmm.
She was dying of cancer then. And I stayed with her for a week and kicked him off. Felt better for it. And I did all the cooking. And I came home and she lived about a month after. So, again, a chapter shut.
Yeah. And you mentioned when we were talking about your wedding that you had a boyfriend before, Dick.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned that you'd kept writing for 2 years after that.
About 2 years, yeah, after I came over, he would write. And then he wrote, the last letter I had was, he had met a widow who had two little girls. And they were going to get married, and he thought that we shouldn't write anymore.
And did you see him when you went back?
No.
No.
I went past the house.
Yeah?
I didn't kind of look that sideways. I didn't do anything.
Mm.
You know, there's an honorable thing here. He was married, I was married. And that
yeah.
was it.
And did you think about him once you were in Canada?
No. It was kind of like having a family member that you know you have. It's there, it's comfortable. But you really don't think of all your uncles all the time, do you? You know what I mean? It was just a chapter.
Yeah.
And you close that off. But it's still there. I think that's how it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are all the questions that I have. Is there anything that you want to add? Like, we were talking before and you told me a story about going back and meeting with women that you worked in the factory. Did you want to tell that story again?
Do you want to hear that one?
I really liked the story.
Oh, all right, I'll tell him. And when I went back, I had, during the war, worked in this factory with these girls, and it was Mary, and Mary Smith, and she came from a large family, and when they talked about their brothers, it was always Jimmy Boy, Billy Boy, Bobby Boy, always. And Mrs. Smith, she was a typical something like you would see on Coronation Street 50 years ago. She always wore a man's cap and her hair in curlers and three aprons, and she looked after all the grandchildren all day, and everybody at the end of the week gave her 10 shillings, which was more than they all earned, actually. Each one gave, by the time she got through, she had more. And every kid got its nose wiped on these aprons as she went by, you know. Well, I wanted to see Mary, and so we went to Mary's house, and she wasn't there. But Mrs. Smith was next door, so we knocked on the door, and she opened the door. Nothing had changed. She had the cap on, the curlers, the aprons, just the same. And I said, "Hello, Mrs. Smith. I don't suppose you remember me, do you?" And she said, "Oh, yes, I do. You're that silly cow who..."